White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, right here in the bunker in north central Indiana, deep under the ground here with cold gray walls of concrete all around me. How about that? We're right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, and that's right next to our growing, but soon will be closing down for the winter, Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. And we're getting ready for a new project in the spring. We're going to try to sneak it through. We've got a lot of land around here and woods and so forth, and we're making a deal to create a training ground here for ISIS. You know, they've offered us a huge amount of money, but we're going to have to put a request into the federal government to get a permit for that. It'll be deep in the woods, and we'll have those CIA-created ISIS people training out there. So hang loose for spring on that one, man. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your big, 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 big donations for the radio show and other projects. And you can always encourage other people around to send a few bucks. And all these people that get up on resist.com, if everybody that went on there send me a dollar once in a while, boy, we'd be rolling in cash, man, I'll tell you. And the date is October the 29th. Ooh, let's see. 30 days has September, April, June, and November. Oh, we've got two days left. How about that? And this is Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. You need to listen to our Wednesday morning wake-up MP3 I just sent out. A lot of good information there. There's a whole hell of a lot of people that are coming together in agreement on a whole lot of things. So if you're hanging around in the most of the right wing, where they're always fighting like hell, they don't get anything done, then you better start listening to other sources all over the place. You can't get all that information from one place. Not even the great and almighty Tom Metzger's source here. Hey, we're starting something new today. I get a little problems in my middle of my back. And one of the solutions, they say, is you're sitting too long. So when I do the show, sometimes I'm sitting for at least a couple of hours putting the show together. So they say you should be standing and not sitting. And then if you are sitting, get up and move around intermittently, which I do that. But I've got myself about a 4.5 foot or so with a riser on it, in front of the console with the computer with the board on it and the mouse, and got the monitor up there, and I got the letters enlarged, and we're gonna see how this works out, baby. We're gonna see. We got a whole bunch of people over in that right wing now are just going crazy about Ebola. That's all they're talking about, is Ebola, Ebola, Ebola. Well, let me tell you something. It's surely a virus. It's been around a long time. We talked about it years ago when people were dying over there in some of the villages in Africa. But let me tell you, it's a virus. But beyond that, it's a false flag to get you all excited and get you into fearism. I call it fearism. There's only one thing you should be afraid of, and that is your race disappearing off the face of the earth. All the rest, most of the time, is false flags that can be solved very simply if you have the right kind of people with the right kind of ideas and on how to cure things. And most things can be cured simply. It's just that people don't want to make that move. So if you're over there in the right wing and you're spending every day now, 24 hours a day, fretting and wringing your hands about Ebola, Forget it. You're wasting your time. You're wasting your time. There may be some people out there who say, "Ah, Metzger, you're crazy. You're a reactionary. You always go counter to everybody else." Well, I have found that in life, and I've read it many places too, I call it the art of contrary thinking, that if one idea is sweeping the nation or the world, and one idea is prevailing, then you take the opposite, and most of the time you're going to be right. And I'm telling you, in anything, even gambling, it's like that. Because what do we say? Yes, the masses tend to be asses. No disrespect meant there. It just means that they got to have their ass kicked real good, like a Missouri mule that won't move. You got to hit them in the head with a 2x4. And that's what's going to happen. The more that they rely on the system to save them, the faster it's going to be time for a little, will you accept bloodletting? Okay. That doesn't mean I'm bloodthirsty. It means I just understand the way nature works and how evolution works and how human nature works. Once you understand those things, you know what's going on. Well, a stray dog sent us in a little message here, and I sent it out to you, but since sometimes you guys don't have a chance to read everything, I'm going to read it to you. Hi, TT. We're nervously awaiting the arrival of Mischief Night on October 30th. Most city people know that this day is a day of looting and burning and destroying property. What does Mischief Night mean to country folks? Also about Australia not allowing new niggers in from Ebola countries? Well, yeah, that's the simplest thing. But the humanitarians, they don't like that. Or the rich people that are making lots of money off people going back and forth across borders. I commented that this is a bad thing. I argued that Australia should allow infected niggers to come to Australia and let them mingle with other niggers already there. In other words, let them in and then quarantine the whole lot of them together. Stray dog, you're using too much common sense. Calm down. Governor of New Germany, Christie, a.k.a. Fat Tony, put a woman in quarantine and the federal authority released her. What about states' rights, man? We demand states' rights. This was a calculated move to make Fat Tony look like he's fighting the system, too. Yeah, they play the people like a... Well, anyhow, he just gained 10 points in the polls, making it look like he's fighting the federal government, especially Obama. If it was a Republican president, he wouldn't do that. Anyone gets the dirt on Fat Tony once he is elected president will have some powerful favors up their sleeves. Well, Sling Blade, you should do that. You should get some things on him. Let me see here. What am I doing? Oh, I know what I'm doing. Stand by. Okay, here's Stray Dog's minimum wage comment. Sure, raise the minimum wage on one condition. The raise has to be retroactive for 5 years. Workers would settle for 1 year retroactive. How about that? Well, you know what? Maybe it's better that we don't champion the workers, because if they're not paying attention to us when we try to help them, and everywhere I go, I talk to minimum wage workers and I encourage them to do something, but they just look at me with a deer caught in the headlights look. Like lights are on, but nobody's home. What good is it to try to help these people? What earthly good? In fact, it may turn around and do you harm. I've been trying to help people for 30 years, and I wonder how much good it's done. Happy Halloween, says Stray Dog. Lots of people in sheets around here with pointy hoods. This has been a note from the Church of Latter-day Insurgents. From Stray Dog, man. He's got it figured out. Boy, those Israelites keep building over there in phony Israel. And I'll tell you, they're getting crazy because they're building more and more. And there's ads going out from everywhere. Now is the time for a home in Jerusalem. Come to the New York sales event. Yeah. It's called Jerusalem Heights. Luxury and prime location. Now is the time for a home in Jerusalem. The prestigious Jerusalem Heights project will host a special sales event on November 9th and 10th at the Avenue Plaza Hotel in Borough Park, 4624 13th Avenue in Brooklyn. Construction's in full motion. So there you go. Get on down. Might be interesting if you live in New York to go on down there and listen to what they got to say. Maybe you too can be lucky and live in the Heights. What do you think? You know, might be interesting. Well, here's an interesting story that came in from Johannesburg. I'm sitting, it sounds like it's sort of a middle of the road, a white guy, maybe upscale as far as finances. I'm sitting in front of the entrance to my new two-story flat in upmarket Sandton in northern Johannesburg, admiring the colorful bed of roses or flowers planted at my doorstep. Two women in their 60s walk around the block several times, and each time they pass, I notice their increasingly sweaty brows, evidence of an impressive effort to stay fit. They look like they might be training for a race, complete with sports shoes and sweatbands on their wrists. A few moments later, a father and his son stroll by, hands clasped, clearly enjoying the joyous arrival of summer at Africa's tip. They smile at two little boys playing with a bicycle. The boys take time out to wave to them with affectionate, beaming smiles. As soon as the father and the son are out of sight, the boys fight about whose turn it will be to ride next. This appears to be a scene of middle-class bliss, but it is not. It is the picture of artificial freedom that wealth and access to credit buys you in crime-ridden and deeply black South Africa. The scene plays out at a massive housing complex with 91 semi-detached, similarly-looking gray brick apartment units that are enclosed by a high outer perimeter wall with electric fencing on top, and a single entrance that is monitored by security guards 24 hours a day. If the ladies were walking in one of Johannesburg's many parks, they would risk being mugged. The young boys certainly could not survive on the roads outside our gates. Given the craziness of most drivers here, especially minibus taxis competing for fares of the poor, they would likely be run over unless they were lucky enough to have their bicycle stolen first. This is what happens when civilized people are threatened to be overrun by uncivilized. The example of South Africa, unfortunately, is something that is going to happen here in the States, and it's going to happen in the near future. Wow. Hold it. That's why I titled this post, "I Wonder What We Will Do." Think about this. Quote, "Experts believe the ubiquitous communities known as security villages in fact give residents a false sense of security from the high violent crime rates that plague the country." Yeah. People are seeking to create a lifestyle that's out of touch with what contemporary urban living actually is, says Erna von Weick, a psychologist at the University of Winterwaterrand, who specializes in traumatic stress. People are seeking to create a lifestyle that is out of touch with what contemporary urban living actually is. Van Wyck's research shows that the residents often band together over shared values. Ooh, could that be race? In turn, they feel the threats can only come from the outside of their groups. There's a false split of where I am safe and not safe in the world, she said. However, domestic violence is every bit as common in gated communities. Yeah, domestic violence is a lot more popular than most people know. Yeah, right, that's a complete load of bullshit. Oh, here's further. In the past 10 years, the demand for these things have increased almost exponentially because people have been worried about crime, said Garth Jager, director of Silverwood's developer Garnet Properties. Jager estimates that many hundreds of thousands of rand were spent on Silverwood security features to lure upper-middle-class homebuyers. Residential and commercial and industrial security is a huge contributor to South Africa's economy. See, they get you going or coming. The corporations cause the problem, and then the corporations sell billions of dollars in security equipment to give you a false sense of protection. The intruder detection services industry is estimated to be 60 billion rand, and that's a $52.5 billion market. According to the South African Intruder Direction Services Association, meanwhile, there are more than 390,000 active security officers employed throughout the country. And I want to tell you, I'll bet you anything that a whole lot of them are black. So if you got black security officers inside your gated community, how safe are you? However, South Africa, and also the pay is so low, even for white people, that it tends to encourage crime, theft, rape, everything. However, South Africa's well-to-do homeowners are not just obsessed with safety. Branding of gated communities like Silverwoods also relies heavily on projecting an air of exclusiveness and community. In other words, snobbery. Add in a strong dose of narcissism. They wouldn't buy there if they didn't care about security. They're afraid. Who makes them afraid? The people who are making the money. They make them afraid and then they offer them a way out. Well, we'll protect you. It's funny. If it wasn't so sad. Many people in gated communities seek to create a somewhat idyllic lifestyle that fits the image of village life prior to rapid urbanization, Van Wyck said. And you know, these houses and apartment deals, they build so close together and right on top of each other that does not give any image of village. Think about what happened to Detroit, Birmingham, Newark, Chicago, Atlanta, San Diego, Oakland, and even near where I live, the northwest side of Jacksonville. All war zones, and if you are of a peaceful sort, you get the hell out of those places. Walking down the street in any of these areas will, in the best scenarios, get you robbed. In the worst case, you will be killed, with no witnesses willing to tell the cops who did it. If it was a brother. So we find places where this type of shit doesn't happen. Might not be the best place to live, but at least you can walk down the street without being assaulted. Well, there's still thousands of small little towns in North America that are relatively safe, and of course, you being prepared, carrying your pepper spray and maybe a gun, shouldn't have to worry at all. As long as you're prepared and are willing to, if someone needs it, to draw down on them, make them understand this is serious. The problem is these places are getting harder and harder to find if you live near a large metropolitan area. Well, don't live near a large metropolitan area. Develop a lifestyle that you live cheap as possible, and as far away from military bases and big metropolitan cities as possible. Given that most people don't have the wherewithal to live in a truly rural area, I would disagree with that. They just have to adjust their lifestyle. I see these walled, electrified, and high-security areas quickly popping up in all over the country near the metro areas where people who are working in the cities pay the premium for security just so they can feel a little bit safe. I submit that people that work in metropolitan areas are putting out so much money that it doesn't work out, because they're having to buy new cars, because if they have an old car and it goes bad on the street, the brother's going to be there to wash your window. Crime is rising year by year, and it's largely being committed by the more, shall we say, vibrant among us. I would say Negroid among us, plus Hispanic, mestizo among us, plus hopped-up white drug addicts. The example in South Africa is quickly going to morph into examples here in the States. Well, I think it pretty much has. They're building these gated communities and walled communities all over the place. I've seen it happening. Every new subdivision that is being built around here is gated. That keeps the cars out, but it doesn't keep the criminals from scaling the fences. The Daily News every day is reporting on the results. Electric fences and private security are coming soon. Yeah, and Wall Street loves it. It'll be a sad day when what is the norm in South Africa is the norm here. But I feel it's inevitable. Well, Mr. Sir that wrote this, I think it's been here for quite some time. I don't know why you haven't noticed that, but it's been here. And if you want to see the ultimate end to having lots of security, with every camera in the world and electric fence and you name it, then rent the movie Scarface. And in Al Pacino's Scarface, and at the end of that film, he's become the king of the coke in Miami. He's armed to the teeth. He's got the most expensive security you can get. Plus, he's got 10 or 15 at least security guards ready to kill anybody that gives him trouble. But watch, see what happens to him. And that's why I have no confidence in expensive security. Now, I will say this, that it's good to have cameras, you know, one in front and one in back, or more if you want. It's good to have these cheap little jobbies you can buy over the internet, sensors that are battery operated. At least you put them out in front of your house, put them out in back of your house. And when anything comes in that beam or whatever, you get an alarm. And they're only about $30 or so for a pair of them. So there's a lot of low-cost security items around. Of course, have pepper spray at all your doors hanging on a hook. I say the gun is the last choice because it causes too much paperwork. Somebody tries to get in your front door, and if you got a chain on the door and it opens the length of that chain, and then you're right there with your pepper spray. Get them right in the nose. Or use Easy Off oven cleaner, and they'll be looking for all over the neighborhood for some way to get it off, you know. They won't be bothering you. So there's a simple basic security acts or practices that you can perform that keep you pretty safe. One thing that keeps you safe is if everybody in town thinks you're crazy. I came here with my reputation that was far exceeding the reality. and so I think that keeps a lot of people who may have bad ideas away from me. I think that every person should try to develop a badass reputation, whether they're badass or not. And it might help you stay alive. Anyhow, that's the end of that report from both the United States and South Africa. If you walk down the street, and don't walk near the buildings, walk closer to the curb, and you must be aware of everything that's happening around you for a half a block. Now, many times you could simply change your direction of travel or go across the street and avoid something. But always, anybody who's coming down the street towards you, looking at you, look them right in the eye, especially blacks. They have a way of detecting that you're not putting up with any shit, and you'll fight to the death. And since it's pretty legal in most places to carry a knife, make sure you've got a good knife and pepper spray if you don't want to risk the problem having a gun. So anyhow, that's we used to also recommend people, if they saw something happening, to grab a car antenna, rip it off, and whip the attacker. But the new cars, of course, don't have those kind of antennas, so that's one weapon you don't have. But always be aware of anything around you that could be used as a weapon. A rock laying on the sidewalk, some piece of iron or pipe laying around. There's always something laying around. If you're walking down the street, pay attention, because you may need it. And you got to be thinking about these things before they happen, because if you wait too long, you're going to be dead meat. And be careful about crowds. Now, it's interesting here, a few weeks ago, which I predicted, a bunch of non-whites, Asians, opened up a little nightclub here in town. I've been in there a couple of times, had a drink, but I could see this was a disaster waiting to happen. And sure enough, a couple of weeks ago, there was a girl sitting in the car getting ready to leave the parking lot, and these non-white nigger types jumped in, got a hold of her, drug her out on the pavement, and raped her. And there were several people that came to watch that didn't do anything. You see, this is why you can't trust most people or society, because they were actually enjoying watching this nigger rape this girl. Well, did I get involved? I mean, of course I wasn't there, but did I make a big deal out of it? No, because these people are going to have to learn. These local people are beginning to murmur about the Mexicans pretty loudly, but still nothing really is happening. The police department, the sheriff's department, pick up a few of them and throw them in jail, and then they get out and so forth. But more and more, they're coming in and developing little areas of influence, like in trailer parks and so forth. So if the people don't listen, they'll have to feel. And if they won't do anything, then they deserve whatever they get, as far as I'm concerned. Well, let's read about a lone wolf. Say he's a killer. How about that? But he must be, we don't know what kind of lone wolf he is. There's all kinds of lone wolves. So let's read this article. The face stares from posters, from video screens, and from billboards. Eyes straight ahead, jaws set, lips a tight line. By now everyone knows Eric Matthew Frein, the fugitive accused of the September 12th ambush at the Blooming Grove State Police Barracks that killed Corporal Byron K. Dixon II and wounded Trooper Alex T. Douglas. First thing comes to mind, why? These things don't just come out of the blue, usually. Yet no one knows. More than 2 weeks after the attack, and as the search for Frein methodically plods along the quasi-wilderness of Monroe County, I believe this is in Pennsylvania, the 31-year-old suspected killer is still something of an enigma. an elusive man with an elusive past. He's a ghost, owner Nicole Pipilengius said one day last week when she waited on lunchtime customers at Cole's Pizza in Canadensis, not far from Barrett Township home where Frayn lived with his parents. Pipilengius spoke in reference to the accused gunman's ability to evade the vast army of law enforcement officers scouring the woods for him. She could just as easily have been describing Frayn's background. Wow. The seemingly clean-cut, all-American white boy who peers out from the FBI's 10 Most Wanted poster is a study in contrast to the portrait painted by investigators of self-taught survivalist and skilled marksman with a long-standing grudge against law enforcement and a deadly aim. Well, there's a hell of a lot of people who have a long-standing grudge against the law enforcement, but that's another story. Little by little, authorities have released additional details about Frayn's life, even as friends and family members and classmates speak of a remarkable, average guy who simply had an intense interest in military and reenacting and history. While the manhunt continues, many questions remain unanswered for the community as well as Frayn's family. Quote, I want this to be all over. At the same time, I don't want my brother to sit and rot in jail, unquote, his 18-year-old sister, Tiffany Frayn, said. If they do have enough evidence he did it, he should suffer the consequences. Thank you, sister. Always depend on the family. They don't have to say anything, but usually they come up with some pro-system comment. Born in New Jersey on May 3rd, 1983, just across the street from Stray Dog. Eric Frayn is the son of Eugene Michael Frayn, a retired U.S. Army major, and Deborah Frayn, who worked as a dental hygienist. Wow. In addition to his sister, Eric Frayn has a brother, Michael 36, of Oliphant. He served as best man at Michael and wife Melissa's 2006 wedding. Neither Michael Frayn nor his parents responded to requests for interviews. That's good. Attempts to reach other relatives of Frayn were also unsuccessful. That's good. Public records show that the Frayn family lived in several states over the past several decades, including Indiana, just across the street from Tom Metzger. Wait a minute, I didn't say that. Illinois and New Jersey before moving to their current home at 308 Seneca Lane in August 1994. The home purchased for $130,000 sits along a gravel road in Pocono Outpost Development, a quiet, rustic neighborhood where residents are more likely to see deer than people in their yards. You know, these writers are all looking for a Pulitzer Prize. They talk about everything, but very little about what you're interested in. Tiffany Frayn and her family is much like any other. Everyone gets along for the most part. She had a strong relationship with Eric, despite their differences in ages. We are a typical brother and sister. We fought and we had our moments, but we bonded, she said. At home, her brother mostly kept to himself, but was always there for her if she needed him, she said. I'd knock on the door and we'd talk, she said. When the family was fighting, we'd talk. Just, oh, you know how Dad is, kind of stuff. He does not have a girlfriend, but years ago dated a woman who later became a police officer, she said. One thing she did not share with her brother's fascination with firearms. He was really into guns, she said, and that's why I'm going to join the anti-gun movement. No, she didn't say that. It was an interest he had with his father about the guns, who told authorities he taught Eric Frayn how to shoot. his son and father told police, was the better marksman and doesn't miss. As a teenager, Eric Frein excelled in the sport as part of the rifle team at Pocono Mountain High School, where he graduated in 2002 from sharpshooter school. That's me. The 2002 edition of the school's yearbook, The Cardinal, contains a picture of him demonstrating how to fire a rifle. Eric Frein emerged as one of the team's best shooters but didn't prevent the squad from finishing with an 0-12 record in his final year. Quote, I feel we could have done a lot better in matches this year if it wasn't for the fact that the school cut funding. Wait a minute, this is not what I want out of this article. In other words, you don't know anything about this thing. It is unclear what Eric Frein did immediately after high school, but he later attended East Stroudsburg University, first for one semester in 2005 as a history major, and then for two semesters 6 years later as a chemistry major. He also took classes on and off at Northampton Community College. He did not earn a degree in either school. That sounds like me. I went to a couple of colleges. Yes, I did. But I got bored. Okay, his life in college remains shrouded in mystery, blah, 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 blah. His sister said he since learned that something wasn't true. Eric Frein is not currently employed, said Trooper Tom Kelly, spokesman for the state police at Wyoming. Investigators believe he told his parents he got the job in Delaware so that he could prepare for ambush. After identifying Eric Frein as a suspect in the shooting, state police said he had not been back to the family home in a couple of weeks. How do you know? Well, you did probably have cars watching. After identifying Eric Frein and the suspect of the shooting, state police said he had not been back. Oh, I said that. In any case, his employment history appears to him. This is all bullshit. All fluff. Just some local reporter trying to get a better job. Eric Frein's real passion, all who know him say, was military simulation, or MILSIM. Participants use real or authentic-looking uniforms and weapons to recreate battles. Yeah, we got a lot of that stuff going on around, recreating the Civil War, you name it. Eric Frein was part of the MILSIM group known as the Eastern Wolves, which engaged in reenactments under a larger umbrella organization known as the Red Alliance, with an emphasis on Eastern European armies from the Cold War era. Teams take part in airsoft competitions, which are similar to paintball, except the weapons fire multicolored BBs. Shit. You really want to run around the woods doing that kind of stuff? Eric Frein is pictured repeatedly on the MySafe, MySpace page of IST-Talk Ni Vuk, a group that portrays Serbian army soldiers. That's interesting. That's the first interesting thing I've read in this thing. He went by the name of Vučko, favored in early 1990s Serbian style uniform. I wonder if he was of Serbian extraction. Law enforcement officials have described the accused gunman as having an obsession with the Serbian military history and culture.
You mean he did not love Adolf Hitler? What kind of a terrorist are you?
Okay, what else we got here? Well, anyhow, he's still on the run. There's quite a bit more fluff to this article, but there's nothing really to talk about because they can't find Eric. They can't find his ass. Boy, that was somewhat a waste of airtime. Well, let's finish up this situation with Mr. Trotsky here. I might have read some of this yesterday. Quote from Trotsky, "Idealist and pacifist always accuse the revolution of excesses. But the main point is that excesses flow from the very nature of revolution, which in itself is but an excess of history." Well, I think that's pretty true. Lenin, too, demanded buckets of blood. In June 1918, he reprimanded the Leningrad Soviet for being too genteel in their treatment of opponents. Yeah, they went into Leningrad and killed a whole lot of people, mostly intelligentsia. This is unheard of. The energy and mass nature of terror must be encouraged. The following month, he promulgated a new edict in Izvestia, the newspaper, to the effect that all anti-Semites were to be shot. I know I read this yesterday. Lesser luminaries in the Jewish Soviet heavens took up the refrain. Hirsch Applebaum, a.k.a. Zinoviev, penned a charming article in the Krasnaya Gazette under the rubric Blood for Blood. Quote, "We will make our hearts cruel, hard, and immovable, so that no mercy will enter them, and so that they will not quiver at the sight of a sea of enemy blood. We will let loose the floodgates of that sea without mercy, without sparing. We will kill our enemies in scores of hundreds. Let them be thousands. Let them drown themselves in their own blood. For the blood of Lenin and Yuritsky, Zinoviev and Volodorsky, let there be floods of blood of the bourgeois. More blood, as much as possible." Gee, it sounds like might is right. One would have thought that all this bloodletting would have quickly terminated any sympathy for the Soviets from their kinfolk in the West. But such is not the case. There is much in the fact that Bolshevism itself, in the fact that so many Jews are Bolsheviks, in the fact that the ideals of Bolshevism in many points are consonant with the finest ideals of Judaism. Well, I mentioned that before, yesterday, about how anybody that understands the Old Testament will know a lot about the Jewish mind. They were into genocide for many, many hundreds of years. What Jewish idealism and Jewish discontent have so powerfully contributed to produce in Russia, the same historic qualities of the Jewish mind are tending to promote in other countries. Quote, "Jewish histories are rarely mentioned. They rarely mention the name of Karl Marx, though in his life and spirit he was far truer to the mission of Israel than most who are forever talking about it. However, at the business end of this great contribution to progress, matters were not quite so explicitly dealt with. No Soviet citizen could be referred to as Jewish on pain of death." That's interesting. You couldn't even refer to your neighbor, if he was Jewish, as being a Jew. It almost, to a man, the Jewish leaders of the Bolshevik takeover changed their Jewish names to Gentile-sounding nom de guerre, usually the Russian, but sometimes Polish. How can one interpret this idiosyncratic phenomenon? Let us backtrack a little bit. We have Trotsky growing up in a wealthy, landowning Jewish family, intending exclusive private schools, and marrying a Jewish in a Jewish ceremony, yet he hides his Jewishness behind a Gentile pseudonym and claims to represent the Russian working class. He has definite links with wealthy Jewish foreign bankers, yet he claims to oppose capitalism. He claims to support continuous working class violent revolution against the ruling class. Yet, when he himself becomes the ruler, he suppresses the workers' uprisings, such as the Kronstadt and in the Ukraine. There's that Ukraine again. He opposed privileges for the ruling class, yet he fixes up his own family with cushy positions. What is the answer to this conundrum? it would be easy to dismiss Trotsky and his followers as mere charlatans, tricksters, and hypocrites. There can be little doubt that George Orwell based the pigs and animal farm on these crooks. But somehow this criminal explanation does not totally fit the bill, for the ideals propounded by Trotsky and company were given theoretically support from respectable Jewish organizations in the West. Can it be that there is some split personality at work here, where the Bolsheviks actually believe in what they were advocating, but another part of their personality kept superimposing itself on top their principled side? Did Trotsky perhaps fantasize that he was not Jewish, that he was not privileged, that he was in search of justice? Was there a side of him that was struggling to be Gentile, that craved to feel inside himself the Gentile values of honor, truth, courage, and fairness? Did he envy these qualities so much that he turned jealously into hate, turned a wish to be like into a wish to destroy? All we can do is speculate, because unfortunately, little is known of Trotsky's real psychology. There are no personal letters, no opening up to friends and family, no records at all of any substance. All we can say is line up Trotsky with his kinfolk in the psychological historical study and see if we can find any interesting patterns of behavior showing up. And that's the end of our session on Trotsky. Next, we'll go into, not today, but we'll go into communism itself as a tool. Righto. I'm going to run you a little tract here from a religious channel, which sometimes I can't tell whether they're pro-religious or anti-religious, but this is a little cartoon they put together about Halloween and a couple of so-called Christians talking about it.
Hey Fred, are you here to help out with the school's Halloween party?
Of course not. Halloween is a pagan holiday and I refuse to let my daughter worship pagan gods by dressing up as an axe-wielding psychopath, or a flesh-eating monster, or a My Little Pony.
Okay, but I'm pretty sure your daughter won't be worshipping pagan gods if she doesn't actually believe in them.
Of course she will. If you do the same things as the pagans before you, you are guilty of worshipping pagan gods, even if it's not coming from your heart.
I think your understanding of worship is a bit wonky. Perhaps I can help. Would you like to come to my church on Sunday?
No. Your church uses the letter G and written prayers.
But Christians in every generation have worshipped God by using the liturgy and written prayers.
It doesn't matter. If you just go through the same motions as those Christians before you, you're not worshipping the same God they worshipped if it's not coming from your heart.
So just to clarify, if I just go through the Christian motions, that doesn't make me a Christian. But if I just go through the pagan motions, then I'm totally a pagan.
That's right.
Hey, you know what you should be for Halloween?
What?
Logical.
That's from the wacky world of Christ insanity. Well, a former Texas police officer will stand trial later this year on child sexual assault charges. Erasmo Mita Jr., and I would imagine he's a mestizo, is accused of raping a 17-year-old girl while on duty at least five times between July and October of 2013. As fellow FAR Police Department officers watched, reported the Brownsville Herald. An attorney for the teen's family said Police Chief Ruben Velasquez, another mestizo, tried to cover up the case after they reported the assaults by urging them not to hire an attorney. The girl's family has filed a lawsuit against the city, its police department, and the police chief, and the 25-year-old Mata, who was fired after an internal investigation found evidence of misconduct with the victim. The city's attorneys denied other officers witnessed the assaults or took the girl to an abandoned home throughout the city along the U.S.-Mexico border, as claimed in the lawsuit. No other officers have been charged in this case. Well, isn't that enough? The Texas Rangers launched their own investigation at the request of the family's attorney, and the state agency turned over its findings to prosecutors this summer. Mehta was indicted July 30th on first-degree felony charges, and if he's convicted in a trial scheduled to begin December 1st, the former officer faces up to 99 years. Well, he's going to eat a lot of tacos in 99 years. Why don't they just execute him? Well, that old sheriff down there, El Payo, in Arizona, has got problems again, but he's got firm support by the community, it looks like. A U.S. federal judge on Tuesday ordered a controversial Arizona sheriff to undergo the same training as his deputies to prevent racial profiling. Oh, my God. An unlawful detention in the wake of the lawman's recent comments. U.S. District Court Judge Murray Snow criticized Sheriff Joe Arpaio during a hearing in Phoenix for telling a reporter he would have no problem conducting an immigration sweep like one performed in the town of Guadalupe in 2008, which was later declared unconstitutional by the 9 old men and some women who can decide anything means anything, called the Supreme Swine. The judge ruled on May 2013 that Arpaio, who bills himself as America's toughest sheriff, violated the rights of mestizo drivers with his crackdown on illegal immigration and ordered him to stop using race as a factor in law enforcement decisions. Well, if you stop all these guys and they're in doing something criminal, how are you going to stop that? Oh, don't stop any criminal acting mestizo, because that's racism. Snow said Arpaio's recent comments undermined his office efforts to comply with the ruling. The ruling stems from a 2007 class action lawsuit by mestizo drivers who argued they were unlawfully singled out for traffic stops on the basis of ethnicity. I don't think we would do much better down there. You might think this guy'd be pro us. I don't think so. Well, a pretty sharp comedian has come up with the idea that you're foolish to vote. Boy, that's a new idea. Why hasn't John Fugelsang have his own show already? The man is a genius. Today at his Twitter feed, the comedian came up with a clever bit of reverse psychology about voting in the next year's election, when Democrats may lose control of the U.S. Senate because of poor turnout. Oh, I thought those Negroes and I thought those Mexicans were all going to turn out. As we pointed out last week, one big problem Democrats have is the younger voters just don't give a crap about midterm elections. Without the White House on the line, turnout among young voters who tend to favor Democratic candidates slumps badly, while older, whiter, and more conservative voters turn out at high rates. For example, during the last midterm election in Kentucky, where this year one of the tightest Senate races is happening, the youngest voters turned out at only about 23%. While older male Republican voters turned out at 72.2%. And the thing is, some of these races are so close. If young voters would just get themselves to the polls, they could easily decide several of the most crucial contests. But how motivated are they? Fugelsang took the sarcastic approach to brilliant effect in a series of tweets on Tuesday morning. See what those tweets are. Okay, this is what the comedian said. I'm not voting next week because I think those Tea Party guys should control everything. I'm not voting next week because democracy might inconvenience the aristocracy that owns my country and its government. I'm not voting next week because we've got the greatest income inequality since before the Great Depression, and I just want to let that play out. Well, the so-called comedian goes on for quite a while with all his tweets, but they get more boring and non-funny as you go along. I can't see why they think this guy's funny. Now I'm going to send you a video of a project a woman tried out. She's nice looking, good looking woman, and she's dressed, you know, not overboard, but sexy. And she took this project on to walk, not saying anything to anybody, for a few hours through evidently Manhattan. And the results are quite interesting, because every few feet there'd be a nigger making a comment to her. I mean, hundreds of them. I didn't see one white guy making a comment to her of a sexual nature or anything like that. I'm going to send you this to just show you how it is for a woman to walk down the streets of these major cities. And a lot of these blacks, if it were darker, probably, they would make a physical attack, some kind of physical overture. But this was in broad daylight. So I'll send it to you. You can look it over and see what you think, baby. Well, I'll tell you what. Anytime anybody makes fun of some politicians, I love it, no matter who it is. So here's a clip from Jon Stewart's show about Obama and the boys, man.
The president. Nobody likes him. Everybody hates him. According to White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest, there are reports the president thinks he should eat some worms. Even Democrats running frantically from Barack Obama like he was the bad guy in one of those Chainsaw Massacre movies you have here every couple of years. It's the subject of tonight's Democalypse 2014 POTUS Partum Depression. How toxic is this president? Enough to turn even the most innocuous of questions into a gotcha. Kentucky Senate challenger Allison Lundgren Grimes.
Did you vote for President Obama 2008, 2012?
You know, this election, it isn't about the president. It's about making sure we put...
Did you vote for it?
I was actually in a way to delegate for Hillary Clinton.
So you're not going to answer.
Again, I don't think that the president is on the ballot.
That looked like a deposition from a murder trial. President who? And I love how the reporter just, well, was he on the ballot? How about this? Marry or vote for Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Barack Obama. What? Go. All right. So clearly, obfuscation is one way to avoid destroying your campaign by associating it with the leader of your party. Whereas Arkansas Democratic Senator Mark Pryor went for the delay of game penalty.
Do you think that the Obama administration has done an appropriate job handling the Ebola crisis?
It's hard to know because...
You're acting like she found your porn. Is this your Penthouse magazine? I would say... Sleep yet? Even those who managed to admit that, yes, they did vote for the president, can't even seem to summon the courage to stand behind the decision.
Senator Mark Begich telling the Washington Examiner, I did, meaning vote for President Obama, but that's irrelevant. The president's not relevant. He's gone in 2 years.
2 years? He only had a 4-year term. 2 years is half his term. What kind of way is that? The rest of the Super Bowl isn't relevant. It's going to be gone in 2 quarters. I'm not. How irrelevant is the president? Irrelevant enough that even his own press secretary won't mention him during a spirited defense of the president's relevance.
Senator Begich is certainly entitled to his opinion, but I think the vast majority of Americans would agree that whoever the sitting president of the United States happens to be is relevant in a lot of important ways.
Whether that sitting president happens to be Abraham Lincoln or, as is the case now, President Current Occupant.
Now, the environment for Democrats is so bad right now that in Kentucky, their Senate candidate, Alison Lundgren Grimes, is losing to a guy who has to recruit enthusiastic supporters the same way you have to recruit people to a timeshare presentation.
All expenses paid to cheer on Senator Mitch McConnell.
An email from McConnell's campaign staff asks for volunteers to join him on a bus trip this week and help contribute to an enthusiastic atmosphere at campaign events. The memo says the trip is free. Meals, transportation, hotels for two nights taken care of.
Hands off the minibar. There's not enough per diem for Toblerone.
This guy's been in the Senate for 30 years. He's about to be the most powerful Republican in the Senate. He's still got to buy friends and manipulate his likability.
You know, a lot of people try to tell me how to do my commercials.
Hey, Mitch, what about using a talking baby?
That's been done before.
We'll end with you and bloodhounds.
You know, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. I'm Mitch McConnell and I approve this message.
It turns out, even through linen pants, the bloodhound's tongue feels pretty good on the testicle. Like a sandpaper bath for your ball sack. Pretty.
But nothing better illustrates the turd hole the Democrats are in right now better than New Hampshire's Senate race between Scott Brown and Jeanne Shaheen. This Brown-Shaheen race has been unbelievable. And by the way, if there isn't already a Brown Shaheen on Urban Dictionary, I'm sure there is right now. How's that race shaping up?
A new CNN opinion research poll shows the race is extremely tight. Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen leads Republican Scott Brown by 2 points, 49-47% among likely voters, a statistical tie after the margin of error is included.
What the f***? Jeanne Shaheen's the incumbent. She's got high favorables. She's popular in New Hampshire. She's a popular former New Hampshire governor. Her name's 10 times funner to say than Scott Brown.
Shaheen Machine!
She's a woman so New Hampshire that even a snowshoe-wearing slab of granite covered in beautiful fall foliage is like, we get it, you're from New Hampshire. And she's statistically tied with this guy.
Scott Brown was, of course, asked about being a carpetbagger and crossing the border in Massachusetts, and his comment has drawn a lot of attention. He said, do I have the best credentials? Probably not, cause, you know, whatever, but I have long and strong ties to the state.
Probably not. What? What the what? Probably not, cause you know, whatever. Are you running for Senate or answering whether or not Miley's getting back with Liam? Seems pretty cavalier for someone so concerned with America's security.
Radical Islamic terrorists are threatening to cause the collapse of our country.
There's deep concerns that there are members of ISIS actually coming through the border right now.
I want to secure the border, keep out the people who would do us harm.
I mean, I know how porous New Hampshire's borders are. I'm not even from here, and I'm almost your senator. And by the way, Scott Brown's already been a senator. So how was Scott Brown's border vigilance when he was a senator?
The Washington Post reports today that Brown missed all six hearings on border security when he was a senator from Massachusetts.
Shaheen's tied with that guy. that guy. But that's where the Democrats are at. Neck and neck with a Republican who admits he's not the best candidate running for the Senate in a state he's not from on an issue he ignored when he was a senator from a different state. My advice to Democrats this election season, grab some peanut butter and some of them bloodhounds. It's not going to get you any votes, but sure will feel nice. We'll be right back.
Well, that's it for Wotan's Day. I hope you enjoyed it. Spread the word. Get us a herd. 14-5 and shut your pie hole. I have nothing to say.